Goswami. Tattva Sandarbha is the first of six Sandarbhas, which one way of describing is a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, one of three commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam that Jiva Goswami prolifically wrote. This one is specifically by topic, not verse by verse, although he did the verse by verse one also. And in this first of the six, it's establishing principles that the rest of the five will expand upon. Following the Mangala Charana, the initial eight verses of Tattva Sandarbha, where Jiva Goswami says, I want to talk about Krishna. And then begins the next section. Before we talk about Krishna, what's the best means of knowing Krishna? Pramana is the Sanskrit term. What's source of valid evidence? There's a really fancy English term, epistemology. Epistemology. Woo. Source of valid knowledge about transcendence. Not worldly. There's source of valid knowledge about worldly. But there's, just like I mentioned, if you want to know if your flight is going to be on time, you call the airlines. As long as their computer system is updated, they can tell you it's on time or it's late or it's canceled or whatever the situation is. That's how you can find about your flight, from that pramana of the source of valid knowledge of something. Your GPS can tell you how to get from point A to point B. It's a source of valid knowledge. And there's other systems of that, how to get from point A to point B. Go to yahoo.com and tell them where you are, where you want to go, and they give you left and right and everything. So pramana is common, even in worldly things, but if you want knowledge of something that's beyond worldly, the source of that knowledge has to be beyond worldly, because worldly isn't going to tell you about that, which is beyond. So the senses and reasoning capacity are insufficient. So what are you going to do if you want to know about transcendence? You have to go to a transcendental source. That's scripture or the Vedas. From Narayana, the Vedas come. And he can tell you about transcendence. And then of all the different Vedas, the best in this Pramana Kanda section that starts with 9, ends with 26. Bhagavatam is the best of all the Vedas, and he gives us multiple reasons why he reaches that conclusion. So we're on board. We did that last Thanksgiving holiday, and we have, following Jiva Goswami, we've accepted Srimad Bhagavatam. We don't have to review it again. Like, you know, if somebody has a different idea, like Shankaracharya has a different idea, we don't have to go back and redo, do we accept Srimad Bhagavatam as the best and, you know, the Supreme Court of knowledge of transcendence. So then we started the next section of Tattva Sandarbha, which is, all right, Srimad Bhagavatam is the best means of knowing about Krishna. It's the ultimate pramana. So what does that Bhagavatam say about the topic or the subject? Krishna. And then that's the section that we're discussing. And there are three divisions or three sections of that Prameya Kanda. And we've been discussing the first of those three. And before the end of the day, we'll start the next one. In fact, we'll finish the next one. Yeah, we're going to end up this evening, if all goes well, with text 49, which is the conclusion of the first section. So it's the first section, Jiva Goswami says, if you want to know what is the Bhagavatam about, what is its message about Krishna, one way to know for sure is examine the heart of the speaker. Shukadeva Goswami, what's in his heart? Because he's going to speak that which is in his heart. Very logical. So we discussed that. 29. So I'm not going to review all of that. And what's in his heart is Krishna. Before Krishna entered his heart, it was Brahman. Absolute monism. He was Brahman realized. Even within the womb of his mother, he was Brahman realized. By hearing the message of Krishna from his father, Vyas, that attraction for nothingness or Brahman realization was defected. That ta chetasa, the fullness that he was experiencing of his internal consciousness, of not interested in anything material, full of happiness of Brahman, that inner consciousness was deflected, according to Shukadeva Goswami's own words, Sutta's words, it was deflected to Krishna, Ajita, and his wonderful pastimes and so forth. So that's his heart. Beyond attraction for anything material, fully attracted to Krishna. That was his heart, so that's the subject matter. And then, starting with 30, was what about Vyasadeva's heart? What's in his heart? Because he's the author. And so we heard a wonderful description of what's in Vyasadeva's heart. He also, literary incarnation of the Supreme Lord, beyond attraction for anything material, fully fixed his consciousness in devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in samadhi, and then he had something appeared in his heart. And that's what we've been discussing. The texts are Canto 1, Chapter 7, 4 and 5. We didn't even get beyond those first two, and there's six. We're going to start going beyond those first two. I repeatedly said, at the very beginning, in the middle, and the end, these two verses and this section, text 30 through 33, is really important, besides understanding what the subject matter of the Bhagavatam is. It will be used, and that was what we discussed yesterday evening, starting with text 34, 35, 36, the little compare and contrast. Over here is Vyasa's realization. Over here is what Shankaracharya says is the highest realization. And they don't match. Not at all. They don't match. And so we covered just a little summary of what we did yesterday evening, 34 through 36. We heard Jiva Goswami say, or write, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy is being presented in the realization of Vyas, which means Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is the same as the Bhagavatam philosophy. You remember from the very beginning? There's a strategy Jiva Goswami wants to follow. And that is, Srimad Bhagavatam is the best pramana, best source of knowledge for anything. Second, Srimad Bhagavatam is the same as Lord Chaitanya's philosophy or teachings. Then the conclusion is, A equals B, B equals C, A equals C. Which is, Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is the highest. So note that Jiva Goswami is working on number two, which is the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam is the same as Lord Chaitanya's teachings. For your information, during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lifetime, this term Achincha Bheda Bheda Tattva wasn't known. Where did it come from? Jiva Goswami. Because he's analyzing the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which is the same as the Bhagavatam's teaching. So what's that Achincha Bheda Bheda Tattva? Beta and Abheda. Different and non-different. From Vyasa's realization, which is the basis of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. It's cool. Brilliant. More than cool. And so how they're the same, both are conscious. The living entity and God. They're conscious entities. We want to hear some more. And then some more. Until you point, you go, all right. They're both conscious, but they're different. They're same, but they're different. And how is it they're different? He traces from Vyasa's realization, there's the effect of Maya on the living entity. Moha means bewildered. It's some moha, really bewildered. Yaya, some mohita jiva. Maya bewilders. Yaya, some mohita jiva. And then the living entity is as transcendental as Krishna is. Paropi. Api means although. And para means transcendental. Yes? Just like in Bhagavad Gita chapter 7, there's material nature, and then there's the soul. And the soul is called para prakriti. Para means transcendental. To the living entity, that's us, we're prakriti, we're energy of Purusha, Krishna, but we're para prakriti, we're like him. We're non-different than him in terms of being conscious, and we're different from him in terms of the effect of Maya upon us. The effect of Maya upon Krishna is zero. Although Shankaracharya says something else. Shame on him. But Vyas doesn't say that. Vyas says, Mayam cha tad apashrayam. For those of you that weren't with us, this Sanskrit is new. For those of you that are with us, it's just helping connect the dots. So when you're done, you have a picture. You know, painting by dots. Then you got a picture. The picture is, Maya is under the ashraya, or under the control of Krishna. And she's at a distance. In fact, it says she's behind him. We can't see Krishna because she's guarding Krishna. We just see Maya. But behind Krishna, behind Maya is Krishna. But Krishna says to Vyas, okay, Maya, you can move now. I want to show myself to Vyas. So Maya's behind, under his control. Maya. So that's the relationship between Maya and Krishna, under Krishna's control. And the relationship between Maya and the Jiva, some Mohita Jiva, they're different. They're eternal. They're co-eternal. Living entities, we know from Bhagavad Gita, don't come into being. They never will come into being. They're eternally existing. And we're going to hear it again from 11th Canto Bhagavatam, Coming Attractions. We'll hear that on Sunday morning. So it's similar and different. Jiva Goswami, one more time. Jiva Goswami is helping his reader understand The teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya. The teaching of Lord Chaitanya is the teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam. They're identical. That's the task that he's put before himself, and he's doing it. Achintya Bheda, Abheda Tattva. That, you know, Tattva Sandarbha. Weaving verses of the Bhagavatam to present Lord Chaitanya's teachings and the teachings of the Bhagavatam, and they're identical. The conclusion of which is the teachings of Lord Chaitanya is the best. Yesterday evening, we began applying the realization of Vyas to Shankara's teachings and see how do they compare. Defeating Mayavad philosophy. So establishing Achintya Bheda Tattva and defeating Mayavad philosophy. And we heard a little review. We heard, you know, the poison of Mayavad doctrine. And if you recall, in text 35, there was mention of this word upadhi, because Shankaracharya says, review, there's only one thing, and that's Brahman, and there isn't anything else. If you think there's anything else, that's illusion. So then the question comes, where does this illusion come from if there's only one thing? Very creative. Shankara says, well, illusion is something that doesn't exist and doesn't not exist either. Come again? Yeah, sure. Illusion is something that doesn't exist, but it doesn't not exist either. So there. There's only one thing, and that's Brahman. And this other thing, illusion, well, it doesn't exist, but doesn't not exist either. Well, Vaishnava Acharyas say, come on, it either exists or it doesn't exist. It can't be both. And if it does exist, then there's two things, at least. There is Brahman and there is illusion. And if it doesn't exist, then how do you explain the diversity in this world? Well, it's a shell game. It's cheating. The emperor has no clothes, we were saying yesterday. Then Jiva Goswami asked this nice question. Let's just for a moment accept, it's the hypothetical, just supposing you're right. There's this, it doesn't exist and it exists at the same time thing, illusion. How did it happen that the undifferentiated Brahman became covered by illusion? You remember that? Well, just this review, and there's only two parts left. One is, once upon a time, there's only one thing, Brahman. And then along came this thing that doesn't exist and does not exist called the upadhi of what's the word? Okay. Ajnana. So there's a list of five. That's the culprit. This ajnana. Because Brahman is jnana, knowledge. Pure knowledge. You want to become situated in Brahman, get knowledge. If you don't want illusion. So along comes ajnana, ignorance. Don't ask me where ajnana comes from, because there's only one thing. It's only Brahman. Where does it come from? Well, it's this thing that doesn't exist and doesn't not exist at the same time. Ajnana comes along. So that's one of the five. And then, it gets really interesting, Ajnana divides itself into two. Don't ask how that happens. It just, and Vidya covers Brahman, becomes God. God doesn't exist because all there is one thing, Brahman. But knowledge covers Brahman. It's an upadhi. It's not real. It just appears to be real. And it covers Brahman and it becomes Ishwar or God. Because the Vedas speak of these things. So you've got to, like, do a shell game to say, what Ishwar? So what's Ishwar? Well, it's Brahman covered by jnana. And then over here, there's Brahman that gets covered by ajnana. Little pieces of ajnana cover little pieces of Brahman and you get jivas. But, you know, it's just an upadhi. There's no such thing. There's no such thing as God. There's no such thing as jivas because there's only one thing. Brahman. So now we have the real one thing that's jnana. And then there's ajnana, there's vidya and avidya, and there's Ishvara and there's jiva. There's five. And you know, they're just upadhis. And you want to get the solution to the problem? Get knowledge. But you know where you're going to get knowledge? From God. Who doesn't exist. But you go to Him, and He gives you knowledge, and then you can overcome ignorance. And you're Brahman. Ta-da! Now, important, there are three different ideas, we're going to show that those two slides again, of amongst Mayavadis that say it's all one, it's not all one. I mean, there's divisions of Mayavadis. Because when you ask the question, how did it happen, this ajnana that doesn't exist and does it not exist, this ajnana, how did it happen that how, what's the procedure by which ajnana covers Brahman? So there's differences amongst Mayavadis about how it happens, but those five upadhis, they all, they sing in chorus, a trio, they all sing the same song. There's five upadhis, and they cover Brahman. Woo, woo, woo. How does that happen? Well, there's different ideas of how that happens. We just did this. We just did a little review of 34 to 36. It's not moving. Is there some problem here? Battery's weak or something? Who is this an image of? Krishna Das Kaviraj, who wrote in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 2. That when these difficult conversations and controversies about this and that, don't avoid them. Why? It's not moving. Help. Help. Do we need a new battery or what's the program? Okay. Well, what he says is, I'll read it. A sincere student, that's all of you, because otherwise it's Black Friday, you'd be out doing something else besides hearing Tattva Sandarbha. Your sincere students should not neglect the discussion of such conclusions, considering them controversial, for such discussions strengthen the mind. Thus, one's mind becomes attached to Krishna. The goal is not just become, you know, good at argument and logic. The goal is to become attached to Krishna. So that's why we're doing this, because we would like to become attached to Krishna. So now, this is review, and we're almost done with the review. Text 36, 34, 35, 36. So in response to the question, how did this inexplicable thing happen? How did Brahman become covered by upadis? And there's three different perspectives. You'll hear some more as we go along, but some of them evolved, interestingly, after Shankaracharya's time. And one of them is, you heard about yesterday evening, the pot enclosing some space or sky. It's called Parichayad Vada, the doctrine Vada of Parichayad. Parichayad is a term that's found in the Upanishads. So he just borrows that term and says, here's how it happened. That this ajnana that both doesn't exist and exists, or neither exists or doesn't exist, this ajnana thing divided itself into multitude of ajnanas and covered little portions of Brahman. That's called what a jiva is. That's how it happened. Just like a pot can enclose part of the sky. Solution, break the pot. And then the pot that's within the sky that's within the pot merges with the sky that's within the sky. Then it's oneness. Actually, it's even oneness now. It just looks like something else. That's how it happened. The Sanskrit term is parichayad. You're going to hear it again and again. So, parichayad. Gopi Pranadana uses this term, delimiting. If you remember yesterday, I used the example of the boundary of South Plainfield. Who knows, some years from now, it's going to be the same boundary, and who knows what it was some time ago, but today it's whatever it is, the city limits of South Plainfield. It's artificial, but it defines South Plainfield, the boundary of the city, so it delimits the territory. Yeah? That's the use of this term, parichayad. And it's just artificial. Just get rid of the artificial, you're Brahman. Next is reflection. And in summary, this reflection theory, some Shankara followers like this one, it's to explain or it's to assist saying the object, Brahman, is like the object that we see because it's a reflection of Brahman. Don't ask how it happens or what it reflects on or anything like that. It's just an explanation of how it happens. Brahman becomes reflected in ajnana. Don't ask where ajnana comes from. Don't ask how the reflection happens, but that's how it happens. Brahman becomes reflected in ignorance or illusion. And as it says at the bottom, Ishvara and the jivas are real because they are nothing but Brahman. It only appears to be something other than Brahman. Like the reflection of an apple in the mirror looks like the apple that it's a reflection of. So it is a reflection. The reflection is real, but it's not the apple. You with me? Little, tricky. Very convoluted. And if you don't like those two, here's the third one. The third one is, as I explained yesterday evening, is what I grew up in Hare Krishna movement hearing is Divarta Vada. And Divarta Vada is this thing that we see out there, South Plainfield and bodies and, buildings and stuff. It just doesn't exist. Doesn't even exist. Doesn't even, like in a dream, it may exist in your dream, but this is stronger. It doesn't even exist. And that's this, again, it gets superimposed on Brahman. But just wake up from the dream of thinking it exists and you're Brahman realized. That's number three. And we heard at conclusion yesterday evening that Jiva Goswami says this is quite unreasonable. And some parts of it are just like absurd. And the part that he says that's absurd is this indivisible Brahman becomes covered with both jnana and ajnana. Come on. He who is in control, according to the Upanishads, the creator, the controller, under his direction, Maya is working, the Maya covers him. And Maya covers him by both jnana and ajnana. I mean, it's absurd. And, most importantly, besides it's totally illogical, it doesn't match Vyasa's realization. Most importantly, it doesn't match. Now, one of the exercises of Jiva Goswami is the teaching and the realization of Shukadev matches. So we accept Shukadev, and sorry, but we don't accept Shankaracharya because it doesn't match. Besides, it's quite unreasonable and absurd. So there. The refutation of Mayavad philosophy is now going to continue. Now, I want to just share one thing, because I think it's part of our exercise here. One of the longest sections of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is Kapila Dev's teachings to Devahuti. Canto 3 starts with text, chapter 25, and goes into the early 30s. Big section. And it's all in response to one question, which is how to overcome the affinity for Maya. Yes. Isn't that something? As I said at the very beginning, all of us have some core faith or conviction. There is a higher reality. We're spiritual people. We believe in, we have conviction, and we're sure, not unsure. There's a higher reality. And there are different persons that have different ideas what that higher reality is. And we're exploring what that higher reality is. We have that conviction. Now, Devahuti has that conviction. So she's asking how to overcome Maya, this thing that says what isn't. And we accept what isn't as our life and become miserable. Besides, wanting free from the misery. How do we get to reality instead of illusion? Same topic. And The answer that that Kapila Dev gives is association of devotees, devotional service. It's the Bhagavatam's message, and it's deeply expanded. So now, back to one of the questions I asked at the beginning. Why are we doing this? And the answer is Sadhu Sangha. Jiva Goswami is giving his association. We can associate with Jiva Goswami. Just like you can associate with Prabhupada, you can associate with Srila Prabhupada by reading the Bhaktivedanta purports. It's not physical association, it's Vani association. Sadhu Sangha. Jiva Goswami is doing the same thing. It's why we're doing what we're doing, to get out of Maya, to overcome this affinity for matter and become attracted to Krishna. How do you know what Krishna is? Read Tattva Sandarbha. Read Srimad Bhagavatam so you're really clear what Srimad Bhagavatam is saying. And then your mind can be Srimad Bhagavatam. You're hearing pastimes. The fullness of the effect is when your mind is very fixed. Part of the problem, just like chanting japa, our mind wanders, flickering, unsteady, distracted. Yes. So how to get to undistracted? Well, sound vibration, you have to strive to hear. And one of the things, guided by the sadhu sangha of Jiva Goswami, and then you get, oh, that's what's going on. What's the goal? Become attached to Krishna. Not just make your mind stronger, but become attached to Krishna. Making the mind stronger will help you become attached to Krishna. Because if your mind is weak, you're chanting distracted japa and you're reading Srimad Bhagavatam and not getting the full benefit. That's why we're doing this. Jiva Goswami is very kind. There's a wonderful verse amongst many, many, 18,000 wonderful verses in Srimad Bhagavatam that I like very much. It's Canto 10, Chapter 2, the prayers of the demigods to Lord Krishna within the womb. And one of those verses says, great souls, before leaving this world, they leave behind them a boat to cross the ocean of material existence. Prabhupada did that, the Bhaktivedanta purports. Jiva Goswami did that in the Sandarbhas. And they're revered in the Vaishnava world. They're loved in the Vaishnava world because of that gift, the boat to cross the ocean of material existence. Get on the boat. That's what we're doing. Taking Jiva Goswami's association, and he's, besides being brilliant, he's very, very kind. That's my experience, besides being brilliant. You have to, if you're lazy, don't bother, because you'll just like fall asleep. Oh boy, too troublesome. But it'll make your mind strong, the purpose of which is to become attached to Krishna. This is sadhu sangha that we're doing. Sangha of Jiva Goswami. And where did Jiva Goswami get what he got? He got from his brother. What did Goswami get from Lord Chaitanya? This descending mercy is being handed to us. Just add one little thing and then we'll carry on. I received an email from Devamrita Swami. Some of you may know him. Some of you may not know him. He's brilliant devotee. Very, very deep, philosophical, but also lots of fun. Wonderful Vaishnav. He wrote to me saying, can I have the link for listening to the classes, because I really value that devotees are taking the time and trouble to go through these very elevated literatures. And then he shared, it's the one reason in New Zealand, because that's one of his main preaching places, so that we can get proper presentation of these wonderful literatures, because minus the proper presentation, there's all kinds of other things, and who knows what it is. Sloppy. So quality, precise. Gopi Pranadana spent 15 years. It wasn't like, you know, quick. That's the standard that the BBT would like for such presentations of these wonderful literatures of the Goswamis. And in your handout sheet, you'll find some statements by Srila Prabhupada, how important it is to do what we're doing right now. Because it'll help you have your mind very clear, so when you're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the message comes in and your heart becomes filled, like with Vyas, of attraction for Purusha Purna or Shukadeva Goswami, Ajita. That's what your heart will be filled with. But we need very, very careful renderings of these writings of our, you know, sadhus, the real existence. One last thing. It's not, you don't have to be like, you know, an intellectual. You just have to have a good receiver. Just like open your heart, let the sound vibration go in, and let your heart fill up with Krishna through sound. Our process is not an intellectual process. Our process is a devotional process. We want the proper sound vibration, and we want to have our hearts open. You need a proper transmitter and a proper receiver. And then realization will come. That was there with Shukadev, that was there with Vyas, and that can be there for us through the Sadhu Sangha of Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose teachings are none different than the Srimad Bhagavatam. The symmetry is beautiful. It's work, brahminical work. It's not, you know, fruitive work. It's brahminical work. We're accustomed to being lazy. This is not for lazy. I mean, even if you're lazy, it's still beneficial. But to get the full benefit of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's gift, being lazy isn't okay. It's with some work. And the work is, have your receiver on, that's all. Open your heart, let the sound vibration come in. Use your intellect, use your mind, use these faculties that are God-given. Make your best use of the bad bargain, as Prabhupada would say, and let the sound vibration do its work. Whatever your position, according to guna and karma, whatever the upadi that's covering your soul, the subtle body and the gross body, whatever it is, don't worry. The process is perfect. With faith in the process, it's going to work, however gradually or fast or in between. Okay, so that's the review, and here's some good news. These two morning classes are going to be much shorter than all the other ones that I've been doing so far. I told you on Thursday it's going to be, you know, a lot. Now I'm telling you on Friday it's going to be less. So we're just going to cover two verses, 36, 37. Following on from defeating Mayavad philosophy on the strength of Vyasa's realization. And then, you know, the gobbledygook that Shankaracharya says that's different than what Vyasa's realization is. Okay, so here we go. Text 37. Next, Jiva Goswami takes an initial pass at these two of the three, pratibimba and paricheda. Remember what those terms mean? Pratibimba is delimiting. Paricheda is reflection. You know, the pot is the delimiting, and the reflection is paricheda. Those are his explanations and his followers' explanations of how it happened that Brahman became covered. Quite unreasonable. So Jiva Goswami looks, one after another, the consequences that ensue if the upadhis of Brahman are real. And then next, what if they're not real? Because there's, amongst mayavadis, it's not all one. Some say their upadhis are real, some say they're not real. This third one, Vivartavad says it's not real. But we're going to deal with the ones that say it's real. The upadhis are real. That's these first two. Pratibimba and Paricheda. Jiva Goswami writes, text 37. Considering the matter more deeply, suppose these upadhis were not products of illusion and were substantially real. If that's the case, it's not possible they can subject Brahman to division. Why? Because Brahman doesn't undergo change. You can't have before and after. Brahman doesn't undergo change. So Shankara, or Shankara's followers, how did it happen? Sorry, not possible. Division, how it happened, is not possible. Because Brahman is not dividable. And nor does it undergo change. And then this reflection idea, well, in a reflection, there's no substance, right? Like, there's an apple, there's, in the mirror, there's a reflection of the apple. There's no substance in the reflection. You can't get nourishment from the reflection of the apple. There's no substance in the reflection, in a reflection. So if there's no substance, if there's devoid of qualities, Brahman, which is devoid of qualities, extends everywhere and has no parts, cannot have any relationship with upadhis, this reflection thing. You know, the apple and the reflection of the apple. There's no connection between, there's no substantial connection between the apple and its reflection. Now, that's with an apple that has color and shape and ingredients, but Brahman doesn't have any of that. So how can there be a reflection of something that doesn't have any of that? It can't even be visible. For example, sky. So Jiva Goswami is using this example. If there's something in this world that most closely resembles Brahman, it's the sky. Now, ether, akash. And not only, you know, material science says, but what's the color of sky? Well, it's colorless. There's things in the sky that may look at blue, but it's colorless. There's nothing there. And so how do you reflect something that has nothing? You may be able to reflect some luminaries in the sky, or a cloud in the sky, or a plane flying in the sky in a mirror. But the sky itself, how can you reflect that in a mirror? Sorry, but the theory of reflection doesn't work. It's not possible. You know, it's not even notionally possible. Continued. for those who Mayavadis that advocate Parichet, that's this delimiting theory. He already said it, but Brahman can't be divided by definition. That which is one can't be divided into many. It's a nice try. Then, where did this upadi, the pot, come from? Because there's only one thing, and then now you have two things. So where did it come from? Well, we heard what Shankara says. Well, it's a thing that doesn't exist, but doesn't not exist all at the same time. Word jugglery. Covered Brahman, and then uncovering Brahman means change, which can't take place in Brahman. So it's like, you know, becoming covered and then becoming uncovered. Sorry. And pure knowledge cannot be covered by ignorance or illusion. Sorry. Your theory is insubstantial. That's the covering one. Now comes the reflection one. And his conclusion is it's equally poor. So some portion of celestial bodies within the sky can be reflected, but the sky itself cannot be reflected. It's invisible. We're not just saying sky, we're saying, you know, akash. Akash, you know, it's like outer space. Not just look up in the sky and it's blue, but space. It's invisible. How do you reflect something that's invisible? You may reflect something that's in it, but not Brahman. The totality of the sky cannot be reflected. Besides, you know, what's the reflecting surface? What's the big enough reflecting surface of the totality of everything? Sorry. So he says this metaphor of reflection fails as badly as that of division in explaining what we see, what we practically experience. There's duality here. Now, these terms, pratibimba and parichet, they're found in the Upanishads. So there are such things. And the classic example we've heard so many times is the rope and the snake. So there's the rope, and the rope exists, and snakes exist. They're not necessarily the same. The snake exists only in the consciousness. Somehow it didn't make it on the whole slide. The consciousness of the observer. You got it? You look at a rope. Oh, the snake! And you feel some feelings of fear, although it's only a rope. Because in the consciousness of the observer, it's a snake. Now, snakes are real, and ropes are real, but thinking in a mistaken way that the rope is a snake, that's an example of in the consciousness. So let's go back to something that we said, Jiva Goswami said, the soul is both conscious and consciousness. Remember that? The lamp that is luminous and it illumines other things. It extends that illumination to other things and other things become illuminated by the lamp. Similarly, the soul is conscious and consciousness extends to other things. We become conscious of objects. But consciousness can become contaminated. The soul is one thing and the consciousness extending from the soul can become contaminated. Perverted or colluded or conditioned, like looking at a rope and thinking that it's a snake. And because you think it's a snake, you feel some fear. Do you remember that verse that was quoted by Bayam Dutriyam Abhinivesha Tuxyat? If you become Abhinivesh, means you become attached to or have some affinity to something other than Krishna, dutiya. Become attached to something other than Krishna. Turn your back to Krishna. Ignore Krishna. You're going to become attached to something other than Krishna. And the result of that is fear. Bhagavatam is wonderful. You want to overcome fear? Become attached to Krishna. How do you become attached to Krishna? By sadhu sangha. Then you can say, yeah, but, which is what Devaki said. Yeah, but, I'm attached. Okay. We have good company. We have lots of people who are attached. You know, different degrees, to different things, this and that. What's the solution? Because it's a fearful place, being attached to what doesn't exist, or the illusion. So, sadhu sangha. And through sound vibration, we can become freed from that. It's a wonderful process. So just like the rope and the snake, they do both exist, but thinking that the rope is a snake creates fear. So similarly, if we accept the upadhi of the soul, what's the upadhi of the soul? The gross and subtle body. I am this body. Or, I'm the subtle body. I'm the thoughts and feelings and emotions and attractions and repulsions and all that stuff that goes on in the subtle body. If I think that's me, it's like accepting the rope to be a snake. So there are such things. But the way that the Mayavadis are applying it, it's cheating. It's a misapplication of the notion that's there within the Upanishads or within the scripture. They've twisted Vyasa's writings in a shameful way. Shame on them. And Jiva Goswami is pointing it out. So, a little repeat. Oh, there's the snake moving. Okay. Okay. Again, repeat. If division or any other process is indeed a fact, it cannot be undone simply by theoretical knowledge of substantial non-difference. You know, just like sing the song of Brahman Kijai, and it doesn't take away the effect. If they're real, singing a song doesn't take away something that's real. Very interesting. Next message. Well, some Mayavadis say, God or Ishvara, he has this vidya potency, and if you just like hang out with Ishvara and get the vidya potency, then the avidya can be removed. Some say that. Jiva Goswami says, well, they're agreeing with us then. Because God has the capacity to give transcendental knowledge, or his representatives have the capacity to give transcendental knowledge, associate with them, and you become free from the mistaken idea that I'm this body and I'm anything other than the eternal servant of Krishna. So they've just acknowledged two things. There's a difference between God and the living entity, and the mercy of God can deliver the living entity. That was unintentional on the part of some Mayavadis. Now, these two points above are then explained further. So here's a nice little image of a poor man, a beggar. And he's in prison. Not only he's a beggar, he's in prison. And is it possible for him to get out of prison and become rich just by imagining, I'm a king? By theoretical knowledge, he gets out of prison and he's rich. I'm a king. quite illogical. Now, we're still on 38. This is second of two. We did 37, 38, and then we're done. So here's Shankaracharya, or a painting of Shankaracharya. And he used this term that Vaishnavas also use, Mahavakya. What does Mahavakya mean? Vakya means something you say or utterance. And Maha means great. So Shankaracharya said, my vast study of the Vedas leads me to the conclusion that there are certain utterances within the Vedas that are principal utterances that rule all other messages of the Vedas. And one of them you're going to see 16 times. That's this one, Tattvamasi. In Chandogya Upanishad, I haven't read it, but those that have say it's repeated 7 times. Not 3 times. Kalo nasteva, 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 gatiranyata, for emphasis. 7 times. Tattvamasi, tattvamasi, tattvamasi. And 4 more. Like, it's really important. So, Shankara says, that's really important. It's a Mahavakya. Tattvamasi. From Chandogya Upanishad. And then from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad is Aham Brahmasmi. We've all heard that one. Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman. Well, so there you have it. I am Brahman. It's all one. And Tat Tvam. You are that. You're Brahman. That's his reading. You are Brahman. Just keep saying it enough times and you'll realize you're Brahman. Jiva Goswami explains this is the oneness, but there's other places in the Vedas that say there's difference, including the Upanishads, which we've already given some references. It's the emphasis on the oneness that they're both conscious beings of the same spiritual nature, different than matter, or different than karma, or different than time. They're conscious, not just an energy. They're conscious beings, the living entity and God. Jiva Goswami uses this classic example of the gold in the gold mine. But he speaks of gold bangles. So here's some gold bangles. And the gold bangles have the same quality as the gold mine. And he uses, again, his audience is these highly educated scholars of the Vedas. So he uses Vedic terms. Vedic term adhikarana in English could be substratum. Or the foundation. So, sama adhikarana literally means they share the same substratum. That is, the gold ring shares in essence what's in the gold mine. And we've all heard this. You know, the drop of water tells you what the whole ocean is. Although it's just a drop of water. So the gold bangle tells you about the quality of the gold in that particular gold mine. However many carat gold it is. The part tells you about the whole. This is very important because it's the whole second section of Jiva Goswami's analysis of what the message of the Bhagavatam is. It's the part tells you about the whole. So let's take a look at the living entity and that'll tell us something about God. Just like take a look at the bangle and it can tell you something about the gold mine. But this sameness is this kind of sameness. Quantitative difference, qualitative sameness. And Jiva Goswami gives this example. It's a classic example. It's in Plato's teachings too. Maybe he borrowed it from the Vedas. And that is, supposing someone, Jiva Goswami does this, supposing, to help us understand the substratum idea, or adhikarana, supposing someone lives in a cave, and they've never seen the sun, and then somehow this little ray of sun comes into the cave, and he wants to know, what's that? Well, so that's the sun. Well, it's obviously not the sun. The sun doesn't come into the cave, but the light of the sun came into the cave. So that ray of light tells you something about the luminous quality of the sun. It's not the totality of the sun, but it's qualitatively alike. The part is unto the whole. That's this tat tvam asi. You are that. There's a likeness between the jiva and Brahman. There's dissimilarity too. And the sun, planet. There's a likeness and there's some difference. You with me? This is Lord Chaitanya's Achintya Veda Veda Tattva teaching. Again, he didn't use that terminology. Jiva Goswami coined the term because it perfectly explains what Lord Chaitanya taught, which is the same as what the Bhagavatam teaches, which is the same as Vyasa's realization. So now, the last slide. Yay! And then some discussion. So, to cover the sham, this is Gopi's language, to cover the sham of merely imagining oneself liberated, some Mayavadis propose that even though the entity you, that's Brahman, or Tvam, the finite soul, not the, you know, the, yeah, is helpless, the entity Tat, because that's a pronoun, Sa and Tat, is used again and again in the Upanishads, referring to that, the Supreme. That, Supreme, has effective power to bestow liberation. Remember the Upadhi message that Vidya, cover becomes, that's Ishwara, God. So, unintentionally, this affirms the same things Vaishnavas say, that is, you and that are separate, and they have different identities and different powers and different qualities, and you and that are different. There's sameness, but there's also difference. And you can't get liberated without the mercy of that, the mercy of God or his representatives. So there. Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. And that's our process. By associating with the holy name of Krishna and those who are engaged in taking shelter of the holy name of Krishna and hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. Any discussion? Yes. Do we have a portable? Good. Thank you. Raise your hand again, please. Oh, did you?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Yesterday, you mentioned, Maharaj, that the speaker or the writer should know his audience.
Yes.
So, when Shankaracharya was propagating his twisted theory, what kind of audience was he trying to influence? Because, as I understand, he's also a very special person. He's not just one.
What's the name of the person?
No, what kind of audience was Shankaracharya trying to address?
Because coming attractions, text 47. But his audience was the people of Kali Yuga. Because Kali Yuga is Krishna's plan. The creation is Krishna's plan. And there's four yugas as part of Krishna's plan. So part of Kali Yuga is degradation. So it's purposeful to bring degradation. Now why would... He was instructed, according to Padma Purana, he says to Parvati, I was instructed to do this by the Supreme Lord. And Shiva Purana says. So why would he be instructed to do this? To facilitate Kali Yuga. To bewilder people. But then on the other hand, it was a nice service. People that are inimical towards Krishna, they're, you know, you put a wall up, you stay over there. Now, it has its negative impact on those that are genuine, but those that are genuine, they're immunized against this. Although, they can be influenced by Mayavad impression or impersonal ideas. Therefore, Sadhu Sangha becomes, again, important. But, you know, so you're back to your question, why would he do something like this? Because he was instructed to do something like this. Then why would he be instructed to do something like to assist Kali Yuga? Specifically, it says to create unwanted population that accelerates Kali Yuga. It's something similar, not the same, but something similar to Maharaj Parikshit could have killed the personality of Kali. He knew who he was, but he didn't. Why didn't he? Because it's part of Krishna's plan. It's the age of Kali. I can't kill the personality of Kali because it's part of Krishna's plan. So he set him free. Gave him a place to stay in his kingdom. Similar to Buddha's appearance. Why? To facilitate Kali Yuga. Well, at least in Buddha's case, it was promote nonviolence. Stop the slaughter of animals in the name of the Vedas. And then Shankara restored the Vedas. So, that, you know, in the bigger picture, step way back, and it was part of a sequence to invite Vaishnava Acharyas, Vishnu Swami Madhvacharya, Nimbarkacharya, and Madhvacharya, to present Vaishnavism on the authority of the Vedas. It was a nice service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says the same thing in chapter 7 of Adi Lila. We can't blame Shankaracharya, he was just following instructions, but his teachings are bonkers. And here's the correct teaching. And those sannyasis had never heard the correct teaching. When they heard the correct teaching, it was, wow. We never heard something so clear. The other is so complicated and convoluted, and this is very clear and direct, and yay, thank you. And then Lord Chaitanya said, so now please chant Hare Krishna. Chant Krishna, Krishna. And they did. And they felt ecstasy. It's part of accelerating Kali Yuga. It's a service.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Behind? Oh. Paramarupa, raise your hand.
Krishna Maharaj, on one of the slides you were sharing that you're going to talk about two examples. One was that beggar claiming to be the king.
Yeah.
And then I missed the second example that was supposed to be shared. You mentioned there are two points, and then the first point corresponds to the first example, which is that... the theoretical knowledge, how can it lead to?
The second one is one might suggest that the power of the Supreme is the cause of dispelling illusion. But that is to say, they're agreeing with our position.
Mm-hmm.
So the last slide is how they're agreeing with our position.
Okay.
Okay?
See.
Not all Mayavadis are one. Mm-hmm. Some don't say that, but some say that. And to those that do say that, they're agreeing with our position. One requires descending mercy from the personality of Godhead and his devotees. And it indicates there's two. Their position is non-distinction. There actually is no jiva. There actually is no Ishvara. All there is Brahman. But by making this declaration, they're acknowledging our position.
Mm-hmm.
Unintentionally.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. And I have another question from yesterday's class in the morning, which I only heard later. So Baladev Vidyabhushan talks about two kinds of upadhis, one in the context of 2.3.9.
Speak slowly. Do it again. Baladev Vidyabhushan speaks about
two kinds of upadhis.
Two kinds of upadhis.
One which is pertaining to 2.3.9, where the indication is that Paramatma feature of the Absolute Truth is essentially having only single
it's not exhibiting, Paramatma is not exhibiting the fullness of Krishna in Goloka.
Right.
He's exhibiting the fullness only partially.
Right. So I miss the context, because when I see 2.3.9 and 2.3.10, they're referring to, at least in 2.3.9, the context is that, like, one who is devoid of material desires, they are approaching the Purushamparam, or the Supreme Lord. So I'm wondering, why is the reference of Paramatma coming in that context?
You know, you're asking a technical question. I think I'd have to go back and look at the text to be able to properly answer.
Okay.
How about after the break?
Okay.
That can be their first thing.
Okay. Thank you.
The other verse is Akama Sarvakama Va Mokshukama Udara Di Tivrena Bhakti Yogena. That's 10.
Yes.
And 10 indicates, even if you have material desire, how to become diminished or freed from, slackened in material desire. That's, Paramatma has that capacity to relieve one of material desire. You know, sufferings from ignorance are diminished by the mercy of Paramatma, by having knowledge instead of ignorance rule one's life.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Yes. I was trying to understand why.
Okay, we'll cover it after the break. Yes, and then Madhupati?
Guru Maharaj, what is the difference between Swasukha Nibritta Chetasaha and a person who's in the jail, imagining that he's out of the jail by himself?
Because one is imagined and the other is realized. In the case of Shukadeva Goswami, he wasn't in jail. He wasn't imagining himself to be out of jail. He was realized in Brahman. He wasn't on the path of becoming realized. He was realized. He was out of jail.
The destiny for the person who is sitting in the jail, thinking that he's out of the jail,
It's hallucination. Could you deliver the microphone to Madhupati? Stand up, please. Thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Well, I was just thinking that, okay, Aham Brahmasmi, as you mentioned the meaning, that's a incorrect understanding of that I am the Supreme Brahman, right? But there's also a correct understanding that I am the spirit soul of same words.
Well, I'm not sure what you're asking, but I think what you're asking is, or stating, is we don't disagree with Aham Brahmasmi.
Yeah.
We are spirit. We are pure consciousness. But that's the oneness. And then there's also the difference aspect that's not explained in Mayavad philosophy that Vaishnavas do understand. And therefore, beyond the Aham Brahmasmi is, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna. What do souls do in the liberated state? They don't just twinkle. They serve Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So, Aham Brahmasmi is they just twinkle.
Yeah. So, Vaishnavas do accept that
of course.
We are spirit soul, Aham Brahmasmi.
Of course.
Right.
But then, this understanding becomes more complete by association with Vaishnava understanding, and that's limited. It's not a wrong understanding, but it's a limited understanding if you say full stop.
Yeah. So it's, again, when we talk about Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan.
Yes.
Sambhati.
Yes, exactly. However, you know, within Bhagavan realization is included Brahman realization. It's a subset. So it's not a wrong statement, it's a correct statement. We're a spirit soul. And then the rest is part and parcel of Krishna, therefore we should serve him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Over here, some questions. Please raise your hand. Shorter classes are nice, so we have some time for discussion. But there's a lot of material. Yeah?
Maharaj, my question has two parts.
Okay.
The first part is, will you say the Mayavadi philosophy is incorrect or incomplete?
It's both. Depends on, you know, depends on what their message is. For example, to say Aham Brahmasmi, that's incomplete. It's not wrong. It's just incomplete. But then the wrong part is to say, How do you get, you know, there is no such thing as jiva. All it is an upadhi of Brahman. That's wrong. Okay? Second.
After hearing your lectures, even a person who has a little common sense or intelligence will reject the Mayavadi philosophy.
Yes.
But why still so many people are buy into?
Because they don't have common sense.
Like what do
Maya
they want?
Has,
what do they want?
Maya ya parita jnana, in language of Bhagavad Gita, their jnana, their knowledge, is stolen by illusion. Why does Maya steal their knowledge? Because they've got an attitude toward Krishna. So Maya steals their knowledge. And then they think, you know, like atheistic scientists say, there's no God. Where's the proof? Right? Etc. In the beginning, there was a Big Bang. Okay, where did the Big Bang come from? Don't ask that question. In the beginning, there was matter and the laws governing matter. Okay, where did the matter come from and who gives the laws that govern matter? Don't ask that question. I mean, it's quite unreasonable. So how do people accept that position? Their knowledge is stolen by illusion. Why? Maya steals their knowledge because they've got an attitude. They have a fundamental attitude problem. That's why they're in the material world. They're just like skilled at it. Really honed in their skills of having an attitude. That's how it happens. So a distinction between us and those that have that attitude is we're not, you know, we also have an attitude problem. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in the material world. At the same time, there's some softness of the heart that actually deep inside, I want such a relationship. Somewhere deep inside. We struggle between, you know, the conditioning and what's deep inside. And, you know, vacillate and go back and forth and sometimes. But there's this core something that's inside that says, I want that relationship with Krishna. And so our purpose is to nourish that by association, by sound vibration, prasadam, process of bhakti, observing Ekadasi, and things that also stimulate our attraction for Krishna. So that's what we do. We cultivate that at least. Purposefully.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
This is a question I didn't get a chance to ask last night. So, so what are some like external indication or behavior impersonalist avoidism?
What are some external behaviors that are symptoms of one who's situated in impersonalism and voidism?
Yes, they exhibit.
Nice question. I like your questions.
So I feel even we receiving the like bona fide teachings, but we have receiving those kind of concepts for a long time. So it's really, I feel I'm still have the impersonal like conception.
Well, it's not just you.
Conception.
But I don't disagree with your statement, but it's not just you. It's not just you. It's all of us by conditioning. And we have different varieties and different strengths of... So there's two main areas. Behind materialism is impersonalism. Affinity for matter has behind it aversion to Krishna. You with me? So that's an external behavior that's symptomatic of impersonalism. Second, offense. If I have disregard for Krishna, I'm going to have disregard of things in relation to Krishna. Offend the deity, offend the Vaishnavas, offend the teachings. Offense is this external behavior symptom of impersonalism. The antidote is seeing the Vaishnavas, for example, in relation to Krishna, they're carrying Krishna bhakti. Therefore, on that basis alone, respect should be there. They're carrying bhakti for Krishna. Respect goes to that. Now, the behavior of such a person may not be perfect. But they're carrying bhakti for Krishna. And so that bhakti for Krishna will help them become perfect if they properly follow. So let me respect that and be assistant to help them do that. That's personalism. Service to Krishna and those that are carrying devotion for Krishna. That's personalism. And impersonalism is this fault-finding thing and all the other stuff that goes with it. And all those other things. That's the symptom of impersonalism. It's traced back as envy of Krishna, or an attitude toward Krishna, a negative attitude towards Krishna. Impersonalism. And the Western country is filled with it. Offensiveness. Even in the name of religion, doing things that are not what the teachings of the religion teach. Yes? For example, something that Prabhupada would regularly do, when he would meet with Christians, he would ask them, do you eat meat? Are you vegetarian? And if they say yes, then you're not a Christian. How do you say that? Because Christ said, well, actually it was the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill. You have to follow his instructions. You've got to be Christian. You can't say I'm Christian and don't follow his instructions. That's impersonalism. Like Prabhupada said to the Dainipan CEO, you're a Buddhist. You say you're a Buddhist and you're not vegetarian. You're not a Buddhist. This is a man he's negotiating a contract with. Then he's extending special favors to. You're not a Buddhist. I mean, Prabhupada could do such things because he was so powerful. So we don't imitate. Okay, it's after 10 after 9. What time are we supposed to resume? 10:30? I mean,